It's good to see everyone out tonight. I'll have to say that the average age of the audience has greatly increased this evening. And that's not because we've had an influx of old folks, but we've had an exodus of all of our young folks just about. I think about half of them left for camp this afternoon. And so we'll hope that they have a good time there. I can assure you, looking at the temperatures, there will be no envy on my part for what they're doing this week. But I know they're going to have a great time. And some of the families have taken them over and have stayed over in that area. And I think we've got several who are out for holiday travel also. But we're glad you're here. We do have some visitors this evening. Glad you're here. Tonight's presentation is going to be a little bit different. As you know, Pam and I, Abby and Jake were able to make a trip just recently. And I want to share a little bit about the work in Malawi with you, talk some about our trip and some about the work there just in general. But before I do that, I want to tell you how thankful I am that you are as interested in that work as Larry is, as I am. I told him, and I think I've told him this probably every time I've been there. I've said the relationship between the Gooch Lane Church and Larry is exactly what foreign work is supposed to be like. Knowing the man, trust in the man, keen interest in what he's doing, great communication between the man and the church. And I think that when you explore that work and look at what's been done, it's a testimony that that is how it needs to be done. And I don't know, perhaps one of the elders could let me know this, but we are at this point in the hundreds of thousands of dollars that's been invested within that work. And to let you know, that's bearing fruit. And that's a very good thing and a very encouraging thing. And I want to thank you for the confidence that you placed in me to go over and to help for a couple of weeks in that work. Pam would say the same thing. And we're just happy to be able to come back and to share a little bit about what's going on there. What I'm about to present to you has been presented several times now, but we do have several who are new to the congregation, so you may not have heard it. So let me just briefly give you a little bit of the demographics concerning Malawi. If you compare it to Alabama, Alabama is 11% bigger than the entire nation of Malawi. So we're looking at a very small area, but lest that be deceptive, let me give you another demographic. Whereas in Alabama, we have a little bit over 5 million people in the population. In Malawi, it's 20 million and growing. So it is a small area that has a lot of folks who live there. And some of what you'll see in the pictures, I think, will demonstrate that. But it is a confined area with a lot of people. And when you're talking about preaching the gospel, that's a really good thing. Because Larry never has to travel very far to be able to find 400, 500, 1,000, 2,000 people at times who are willing to listen to his message. Something else that we realize about Malawi, and this is kind of a fluid thing that you research this and there's differences, but Malawi is somewhere in the top 10 poorest nations in the world. You'll see some statistics that give maybe second or third poorest, some 9 or 10th. This one that I'm citing is the fourth, but you get the picture. The poverty level is extremely great there. Again, just by way of comparison, when you take the total GDP, so what a nation produces in a year, the value of that, and divide it out over the number of people in population, this is the contrast that we see, that in Malawi, it's about $1,200 a person, whereas in the United States, it's over $62,000 a person. And while those are just numbers that we think about, you think about trying to survive on $1,200 a year. And that's what a lot of folks are doing. And that poverty is very visible in the area. But it's not something that seems to greatly impact the way people feel. Malawi, their little nickname for themselves is the warm heart of Africa. And I believe that. The people there seem generally happy and don't allow impoverished conditions to impact that a whole lot. But it helps us to realize that there is a great difference in our lifestyles, great difference in our everyday living because of that poverty. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the work. It's somewhat hard to believe that the work has now been going on 6 years in relation to Larry moving there. He's told the story several times about how he got there, but now he's been in that area for 6 years. And we're seeing a lot of the fruit being born to that. Let me again, I hope I'm not boring you with numbers here, but it kind of helps, I think, to paint a picture. When you think about what Larry is doing, he spends most of his time out in the villages. So why is that? Almost any foreign work, you have the men who go over who will spend most of their time in the large population areas. Well, let me illustrate this. The capital city of Malawi is Lilongwe. And in Lilongwe, you've got 1,200,000 people thereabouts. So fairly big city, though not huge by American standards. In their business capital down in the south, in the city of Blantyre, you got about another 1 million people. So if you start thinking about who lives where, you've got about 2 million people that are living in the big urban areas of Malawi, which means in these villages, you've got well over 17 million people. When Larry moved over, his friend James said, "I need somebody to come who's going to spend time in the villages." And that's the task that Larry has taken up. These villages are all over the place. You can imagine an area smaller than Alabama where you've got all these people living there. You'll come across villages that oftentimes will have anywhere from a couple of hundred, maybe to a couple of 100,000 who are living there. And that's where Larry is spending most of his time in the work that he's doing. In order not to be accused of plagiarizing, what you're about to see is a compilation of pictures from Abby and Jake and Pam and me. So I didn't cite them all up here, so that's a general credit. Here are some, though, that were taken over the trip, just to give you a picture of what an average village, an average dwelling might look like. And so you see a couple of these houses that we would think if we passed them in the United States that they had long been abandoned. Yet these are homes. The one in the top corner, you can see the thatch roof, which typically indicates an even poorer lifestyle. The one in the lower screen, you can see, has the tin roof. And interestingly, above it, you see the electric lines going by. Not many villages have that, and so I inquired. I said, so who gets to decide that? Who gets electricity and who doesn't? And I was told that it's if you've got somebody in high places who came from your village, that's how you get the electricity. So most of these places are not going to have power. They're not going to have running water. You see, a lot of the transportation this time of year will be the animal-drawn carts. It was the harvest while we were there, so a lot of stuff piled on these, the animals pulling them in. So that gives you an idea of where Larry is spending most of his time, going into these villages. Crowds will gather, he'll preach, and oftentimes have very great success. One thing he's learned is that if you are going to go into a village, you've got to do some preliminary work, and that means that you are going to contact the chief of that village. And if you can get the chief on your side, then it's going to go a lot smoother. And he, or as you'll see in a minute, she, is very influential in getting a lot of people there. Now, Malawi is a very male-dominated society, no doubt about that. But interestingly enough, two of the villages that we went to had women chiefs. And so you can see this lady in the middle here was a chief, and then the one who Pam's hugging over here, I think she was trying to get some kind of government job with this chief or whatever. I didn't ask a whole lot of questions, but later found out who she was. Both of these women are in that role. Both of them came to the study. So that's not an uncommon thing to have the chief come just to know what's going on. And so Larry has set up a system here where he sends somebody ahead we'll talk to the chief. It's called giving the chief a chicken. That's what they call it. But you typically are going to give a donation to the chief, typically monetary, to get in good favor. And the chief will then allow a worship service or maybe a series of those to take place. One thing that really stood out to me more on this trip, this is the third time we've been over than stood out before, is just how much Larry has gotten things organized in his work. And that is the fact that he's brought three men on board who are pretty much essential to what's going on. The man Moses Combi is more of the one who's in the higher places. He has a lot of influence with the government. And so almost anything Larry needs to find out, Dr. Combi can find out for him. And so he is a very influential man, also does some of the scheduling with the worship services studies that are going on in the villages. The man in the middle there, Shadrach Neondo, you've heard Larry talk about him before. He is the essential man. He is the driver. He is the interpreter. He is the one who's going to meet with the chiefs. He's the one who's taking things down. Just a tremendous, tremendous man. And we'll talk a little bit more about him later on. The other man here is Lazarus Ngulawi, who is a preacher in that area. He was preaching before Larry arrived, but he and Lazarus really clicked. And Lazarus, again, is an essential part of that work because Lazarus is a very knowledgeable man. A lot of times at the end of a study, there will be a Q&A. And some question will come up, and Lazarus will take it, and he'll present the answer because he understands the customs, he understands the challenges, and can give an answer. I told him after one of those that I was responsible for, I said, I sure am glad you were here today, because he was able to take some of those and really explain them well. Again, I'll mention him again toward the end of our presentation this evening. So these three men, working along with Larry, are doing just a great deal of good in that area. Now, to get you a little more specific to what we did, this was our little group that went over. Of course, Pam and I went. Jake Collins went with us also. And Abby Dempsey, who all of you know, was able to go. And so we traveled together, spent most of our time together while we were there. Again, plagiarism alert here. And Jake, I hope this is going to work. Jake put this together to kind of show where we were going. So we flew out of Nashville to Chicago, where we caught our international flight, Ethiopian Airways, which explains why we landed in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and then down to Lilongwe. So you can imagine the plane ride, and yes, it's every bit as long as you're thinking it is. Long way to get there. We took this route, never been that way before, may never go that way again, but it was intriguing to do that. Again, let me give credit to Jake here. He also mapped out all of the different places where we went. So on this trip, not a lot of traveling as far as distance goes. But some of these would be 2-3 hours away just because the roads are that difficult to get over. Once you get out of Lilongwe, with the exception of that road heading north, most of them, to call them a dirt road is optimistic. And so it just takes a long time to get anywhere. But what Larry wanted us to do is to stay fairly close in to the city. And so all of these were drivable distances. We were back, stayed in Lilongwe there near where he lives each evening. So let me tell you a little bit about each of these. This trip was different also in the sense that we were not doing a great deal of evangelistic work. Other times we've gone, a lot of times we're speaking to people who are not Christians. The design of this trip was to speak to groups of Christians, to give them encouragement. And what I found out when I got there, and so I had to do a little bit of shuffling with what I had planned, is that each of these assemblies were actually representatives from the different churches in those regions. And I have no idea how many churches there are in Malawi, but probably in the thousands, would be my guess. And so in each of these places, what they did is they sent word and they said, we're going to have these Americans here. You're welcome to come, but you can only send two representatives from your church. And so a lot of the assemblies were preachers, were elders, deacons, and their wives who came along. And so, I mean, the numbers I'm going to show you, we would consider extremely successful in the United States. They're a little bit smaller than what we were used to, but yet still, most of them proved to be really good studies. You can see the first place we went, about 100, and these are conservative estimates. I didn't hear a count on most of them. 220, 150, 200, and then about 100 in the last. And again, all of these are people who are Christians, who are in leadership roles, but who are needing to grow in their faith. And it's one of those things that you have to appreciate when we think about our Sundays. We're going to spend 50 minutes every Sunday in the Word. We're going to spend another 35 to 40 minutes a Bible-based sermon. We're going to come back on Wednesday night. We're going to have another 45-minute class. We're going to have gospel meetings like we had last week. That's not the case for most of these places. And so you've got a lot of these groups that maybe we could think about 100 years ago in the United States who would be delighted to find someone to come and teach them. And so there was an eagerness here for this to take place. And so the way these would typically go is there would be an assembly of everybody who was present, men and women. Larry would speak and I would speak. And then after that, there would be a division. The women would go to one area. The men would go to another area. And so Pam and Abby were able to do a lot of work with the women, which has not typically been the case when we've been there before. And so here's a picture of what some of these might look like. So you can pick out Pam and Abby pretty easily in that picture. And the man between them, I believe, was their interpreter. And then this was a group of women that met outside, and they were able then to present their material to these women. Oftentimes, Larry and I would kind of tag team with teaching the men, just depend on how much time we had. Sometimes it would be just me, or sometimes it would be just him. But that's kind of what the 2 weeks was like. So we were going to all of these different villages. We were speaking to these Christians, trying to build them up. Larry had told me he wanted me to speak on the eldership as much as I could. So I did present that two or three different places, plus just some general topics that were helpful just for spiritual growth. So that's kind of what was going on. That would be a general picture of those 2 weeks. Now, let me just share with you a few observations that I think are helpful for us in understanding this work that went on. And the first of these, as I've already alluded to, is there is a great thirst for knowledge. When a church is deciding where it's going to invest the Lord's money, you can't always base that on the number of people who are going to respond to the gospel. Sometimes you may have a family that's working in an area that's keeping a struggling church alive. Not a lot of growth, but yet the work there is really important. But sometimes there's going to be a very visible outpouring of success. And that's what is found here. And so when you think about the people of Malawi, there is no hesitation to find a way to get to where the Bible is being taught. And oftentimes, we would meet Christians, either when we were coming in, they were walking in, or when we were leaving, they were heading back home, who had walked maybe 15 miles from another village to one that would be considered somewhat nearby to hear the gospel being preached. And bicycles, if you could afford one of those, Larry's truck pretty much stayed full of people. Kind of reminds you of the old days, those of you older, when you were a kid and all the cousins got in the back of the pickup and went somewhere. That's about what this was like, because this would obviously keep you from having to walk some of that 15 miles, but yet it was an indication of just the interest level that's there to hear the gospel being preached, which again is really encouraging. Sometimes when there would be a series like what we were doing to go into a village for 2 or 3 days, There'd be a lot of folks who would just camp out. They'd bring their stuff. They would split their meals up between them. They would camp out, and they would stay the entire time because they didn't want to miss any of what was going on. And as far as I could tell, there was never a complaint other than one Sunday a man said, "The men are complaining because your sermon was too short." And I thought, I don't think I've ever heard those words spoken before, right? So it was that idea of we have come a long way. Don't shortchange us on this. But isn't that encouraging? And I can assure you it was not on padded benches that these people were sitting. But yet there was a total disregard for things we might consider to be quite necessary in order to hear the gospel being preached. While this was not, as I said, an evangelistic effort like we had in times past, there was a young man who did become a Christian while we were there. His name is Precious. That's his name, Precious. And he had been hired by Lazarus to be his driver during that time. And I wondered about him the first Sunday because I looked over and for most of the time he was sound asleep the whole time. And I thought, well, I'm not even sure, you know, that he's interested in what's going on. But I noticed that things began to change. And early in our trip, after one of the studies, when this Q&A was taking place, he raised his hand and he said, "I'm ready to give my life to Jesus. I'm ready to become a Christian." And so at that point, he's walking across the tobacco fields down to this little waist-deep pool of water, and there he became a Christian. And something I'll read from Jake here will tell you a little bit more about his story here in just a minute. But that does show us that the gospel is doing quite well in Malawi. I don't speak Chichewan, so I'm assuming you don't either. So you may not can figure this out, but those of you who are close, I'm about to give you a context clue that you can probably figure it out pretty quickly. I went into one of the buildings and I saw this written, no electricity, no indoor plumbing, none of that. But here you had this, which is translated, "Phone, turn it off." Some things are universal. So all of your cell phones that you think are worn out and you're done with them, they go to a third world country. And most everybody there has a cell phone, and so they stay connected. Some problems are universal. And one of those, unfortunately, is that there are divisions over issues. We think about, even amongst Christians in the United States, how many things we are divided over. How many things there are very diverse opinions. You've got the same thing going on there. Some of these things have not made their way to the United States, at least in a big way, but are very difficult in that region, even to the point that there are accusations that if you believe this or if you don't believe that, you are not a Christian. And so Larry has really spent a great deal of his time trying to heal some of these divides. It doesn't surprise any of us who know him that he's able to go in to the various factions and be welcomed. And one of the messages that he has brought to them is, you have got to figure out how to be united. And in fact, there was at least one of the meetings that we were at where there were some fairly sizable factions that had come together for the purpose of trying to become unified. And so that's a really encouraging thing, but I will say there is still a lot of work to do, just as there is in our country. And as he encourages them, I encourage us that we never give up on that. But one of the reasons I bring this out is because there is a danger in romanticizing foreign works. To think that everything is going well and you've got all these people being baptized and everything's great, there's problems. Because wherever there are people trying to serve God, there is evil trying to stop them from serving God. And one of the best ways to do that is through division. So I am encouraged that Larry is having that opportunity, and I would encourage us that we pray for him in the work that he's doing. Now, let me tell you here before I close a new facet to the work that we had this time. And that was being able to see it through younger eyes. And I didn't really know how that was going to go. Because we had two young people still in their late teenage years that were going into a third world country, never been away from home for a very long period of time. And I just didn't know how everything was going to work. But I assure you, it was an exceptional effort on their part. And both of them very much rose to the challenge and were instrumental in the work during those 2 weeks. I told them that the only requirement I had is that they had to write an exit report. They had to tell me what they had seen, what they had thought, and my plan was is that I was going to pull part of that out and use it in this presentation. But after I read these, I decided, you just need to hear the whole thing. You don't need to hear my abridged version of what they said. So let me just, they're not very long, but let me just read to you. The first one is what we found from Abby in what she said about this trip. She said, "I am so thankful that I was given the opportunity to travel to Malawi. Words cannot describe the impact this challenging yet immeasurably rewarding trip has had on me. My eyes were open to things I had never dreamed of, and I have a new appreciation for how greatly blessed I am. One of the main lessons Mrs. Pam and I taught to the women and children at churches in various villages was that of the fruits of the Spirit found in Galatians 5. The fruits listed are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I believe God demonstrated each of these qualities to me during my time in Malawi. I was shown in love in almost every circumstance on this trip, but brotherly love certainly stood out to me the most. Upon arriving at each village, we were welcomed with the biggest smiles and handshakes, and before leaving, the point was always made that whether or not we meet again on earth, we will be all together in heaven one day. I discovered the joy of the Lord while in Malawi. On the flight over, and for the first couple of days, I had a very hard time. I missed my family so much. I wished I could tell my grandmother about all this. I was jet-lagged and overall just feeling sorry for myself. But after a couple of days around the Malawians, I realized my attitude had to change. God was giving me an opportunity to do so much good for His kingdom, and it would be a shame if I took it for granted. It was as if something clicked inside me. And as each day went by, I felt the joy of the Lord grow stronger. I never want to lose this joy, and I plan to take it with me daily from this moment on. Once I discovered this joy and the power of prayer, I was at peace. I trusted God and handed my fear to Him because I knew He was in control and His plan would fall into place for me. I learned patience from the Malawian women. They would sit on the ground for hours listening to Mr. Greg and Mr. Larry preach. This is just a small example of these women being treated lesser than men. These women aren't allowed to buy their own Bibles or in some cases choose their own husbands. In some villages, their husbands take multiple wives with no regard to how it makes them feel. I was infuriated for these women the second I saw them sitting on the floor while the men were seated. Why were they treated less than the men when they had just prepared the meal we were about to eat after the lessons? But not one complaint came from any of their mouths. I think they would have sat on the ground all day because that's how hungry they were for God's Word. I realized how often I complain about mundane things and how thankful I am to be a woman in the United States. I admire the self-control and patience of these Malawian women. Kindness and goodness were best demonstrated to me through our friend Shad. He works for Larry and doubled as our driver and translator, but he was more importantly our friend. I don't know if I've ever met someone with a kinder heart. He stated multiple times, "Everything I do is for my wife and kids." He was always smiling and willing to learn. Some days he would drive us for 2 hours, translate for 4 hours, serve us a meal, and drive us back home, and never once I saw him without a smile on his face. His servant heart is one I have much respect for and hope to model. Finally, I believe I was shown gentleness by God Himself. He gave me the time to get used to the Malawian culture, blessed me with the best traveling companions, heard my prayers, protected me through the journey I never expected to go on, much less a couple of weeks after I graduated high school. God is so good. His love and mercy are abounding in my life, and I could not be more grateful to have grown closer to Him during my time in Malawi. Pam asked Abby what her favorite memory was, and she said, it was the time that we were at the Area 47 church, and they looked at me and said, you're teaching the kids class right now. No warning about that. But yet, she got up, Pam went along, and I told her afterwards, I said, it wasn't comfortable, but that was a tremendous experience, because you never know. And some of you ladies can testify to this. You go to a little church that typically doesn't have a teacher, and you're asked to do it. So I think she just did extremely well, and appreciate the good work that she did on the trip. I asked Jake also to write something up, so let me read what he had to say. He said, I'm very grateful to Mr. Greg and Mrs. Pam Chandler for letting me go along with them and Abby Dempsey on the trip to Malawi, East Africa. Also, I'm thankful for Mr. Larry Vinson and his kind friend, Shad Neondo, for helping us feel at home while we were there. It was only by the grace of God that allowed us to have a safe trip and be able to share His good news. As we left the United States and flew across the world, it made me quickly realize how small we are and compared to this world, how fragile we are, and how easy it is to lose sight of the beauty of creation today. How we as people were put specifically on this earth to live among the sun, the moon, the stars in the universe. Surely, I thought, there is a creator behind all of this. Certainly, this was not just an accident. Realizing your own mortality can make you immediately more aware of the state of your soul. To think that we were about to land on the other side of the world and meet fellow Christians who had heard the gospel of Christ as we did was hard to grasp. As we began our travels throughout Malawi, we left the inner city of Lilongwe and went north or south, depending on the day. The farther we got from the center of Lilongwe, the more and more village huts appeared as the poverty rose. I learned and saw that the people of the villages have a job every day, and that job is to work so that they can provide food for their family. You would often see the women carrying things on their heads. They would lay flour out to dry in the sun to use later, as they would also cook. The women would even be chopping wood in the villages as well. Many men I saw were building with the materials they had to use. Countless men would be seen biking, coming back from a neighboring country with heavy loads of firewood or charcoal on the backs of their bikes. They do this for their families when needed in order to survive, since chopping trees and charcoal production is illegal in Malawi. The people in the villages of Malawi enjoy no conveniences of driving to a local restaurant. Most people in the villages would not be able to afford it anyway. You provide for yourself and your family or you starve. You get water out of the local well or you become dehydrated. Whenever we visited a village, they would provide us with an abundance of food without fail. If you had to use the restroom, you would go to the local outhouse, which is a hole in the ground. Not one person I came across while in Malawi treated us unkindly. Nearly every local resident humbly greeted us warmly with a big smile. It is truly the warm heart of Africa. Regardless of how little they had, where they were in Malawi, the people were always respectful and kind. Even with practically nothing, these people were happier than most of us in the U.S. During the times of worship in the villages, I had never seen people so joyful singing praises to God. They sang out in their language with their heart and soul. Never had I seen a people hunger and thirst for righteousness so much until we went to these villages. Locals would even go so far as to walk miles and miles to be able to hear the Word of God preached. One local we picked up before heading to the village ended up being the preacher of the particular congregation to where we were headed. At one village we had a Bible study with, they had a history of spirit worshiping, which is their ancestral worship, and now they are worshiping the true God. Most people wanted to have their own Bibles. They wanted to read more and grow in their knowledge of God's Word. Many of them did not have access to a Bible. The majority of these people were women. It made me wonder if I've taken for granted having my own Bible. I know I do, all the time. While at the first village we visited, I met a Malawian named Precious, who was very friendly toward me from the start. He looked as young as me, yet he was still in his early 30s. We became friends very quickly, and he taught me words from their language and helped me to try the local sugar cane for the first time. He traveled with us as we went to all the villages. Every time he saw me, he would shake my hand and give me a big grin on his face. We would laugh and cut up with each other and began to call each other Chimwini, which means big brother. I was very tall compared to him. He was older than me, so I guessed it worked both ways. I admire how joyous and tender-hearted he was whenever he sang to God in hymns and how he always poured his heart out to God as well. Precious told me one day that he used to be a Muslim, but up to that point, from Precious' example, I thought he was clearly a converted Christian. But days later, after sermons had been delivered, he confessed that he wanted to be baptized. So after our Bible class, we ventured down the fields to find a body of water for the occasion. Then Precious went down into the waters of baptism and came up again as the Malawians began to sing in their language to God. Getting the opportunity to witness that special moment in his life might have been one of the highlights of my life. Precious was officially my brother now. He was my Chimwini. I had learned what it truly meant to be a part of the body of Christ, what it meant to be a part of the branches of Christ, as He is the vine. Finally, what it meant to be one in Christ. The gospel is not limited to Americans only. The gospel is for all. God is no respecter of persons. I had also learned what it meant to have unity in Christ. The church is a universal family. Through the blood of Jesus, we are one. Through the grace of God, we can be one. May you and I always thirst for righteousness and for what is good. Jesus Christ is the source of that righteousness. I was sad the day that we had to leave, but it gave me great joy to carry the lessons I had learned and the memories that were made. That's a lot of maturity in those two reports. And I really appreciate them. I think back to when I was 18, 19. I don't know if I would have done it. I don't know if I would have done it or not. I hope I would have. But I really appreciate what they did and the lessons they're going to learn. And I can assure you that the people of Malawi did not want them to leave. They wanted them to stay. And I told them, I said, they can't because I'm terrified of Abby's father and Jake's mother. They've got to come back home. So it's up to them now if they're going back or not. Let me conclude with one other idea here. There's unlimited opportunities for benevolence. I mentioned Lazarus earlier. If you'll remember, just prior to Larry's trip home, Lazarus was involved in a motorcycle wreck, which really messed his leg up. And the treatment that he has received since then has messed it up even more. Fortunately, he is out of a wheelchair now, able to walk on one crutch. The picture that I've included here, though, is came about because of some of you. We at first were just going to replace Lazarus's motorcycle, and I sent an email out to a few people, and I said, this is what's going on. And enough money came in about 2 weeks to purchase a motorcycle, but as Lazarus's condition did not improve, Larry decided it would be much better to get him a car, and I think that was a good call. But I think with another $300, what had been contributed for the motorcycle was able to purchase him this. And that's been so good because otherwise he would not be able to go to a whole lot of places where he's going, still unable to drive himself. That was why Precious was along. So that again is thanks to many of you. The picture in the middle, also thanks to Christians in the United States. I don't know that I'm at liberty to say who donated what, so I won't, but this is a church building that's under construction a little bit south of Lilongwe. The land was purchased by a couple here in Limestone County. I think the building was paid for by a group of Christians. They've yet to start, well, they are meeting there. They've yet to really put a lot of effort into bringing people into this building just because it's still under construction, but it's getting close. And then that last picture, again, is thanks to many of you. This truck was purchased. We know it had a rather sordid history there for a little while. It was purchased, and one of the men who Larry really trusted betrayed him, wrecked the truck. But it has been virtually rebuilt. And I can assure you now from personal experience, it is a great addition to that work. It's able to take the roads there much, much better, also a means of transportation. So all of those things have been made available because of generosity of Christians who are interested in Larry and the work in Malawi. But let me just illustrate this. While we were there, these were all the requests that were made. At the end of a service, there would be all of this thanksgiving for coming and teaching. And then, but if you can help, here are some ways that you can give us. One was a 93-year-old preacher. You see him pictured there at the top. They said that in this region, he had been instrumental in starting over 300 churches. He rode his bicycle until last year. His asthma got to where he couldn't do that any longer. But he was in need of a little bit of support for his medications. This same group had asked for glass for their church building windows and also for new outdoor restroom facilities. They also ask for what's known as a borehole. And this is where the government comes in, digs a really deep well, puts a pump there so that the water's cleaner. I don't know that this is the well that was there, but it's similar. The one they have is shallow, and so there's a lot of pollutants in it. But the ones that the government drills are much, much better. They were requesting all of that. One group we went to, you see their church building pictured here. They asked if we could help in building a new church building for them. This one, very bad repair, an older building. We went to the next place, and they had a building, but yet the land in front of them was for sale. And they're very concerned that somebody's going to buy that, cut off their access to their church building. And I got really tickled at how they asked for this. They said, we know that by the great help of God and maybe a little help from you, we'll get this taken care of. So that is what Larry's facing, and he's got to make calls. You know, you can't fund everything. But these are the things that were requested. One thing that is very much on his mind is the likely food shortage that's coming at the end of this year. World events are going to likely produce a situation where people, Christians in southern Malawi, are going to have a hard time getting food. And so I would bring all of these to your attention. If any of these are something you think, wow, I'd really like to help with that, I can give you a little more information on that. But I think this last one for sure, most of us will need to really think about what we can do if indeed that does occur, that they're going to have difficulty. Now, all of those are rather costly things. Let me leave with one thing that's not. Everywhere we went, the main request was for a Bible. This picture doesn't really capture the feeling. It was more of a really nice mob. When the Bibles came out, people gathered around the truck. If you look at that picture, you see Shad, right in the middle, and he's having to make the decision of who's going to get a Bible. And so he's having to almost interview on the spot, make sure there's not one in the family, you can read it, you don't already have one, and then to distribute that. This is what he's giving out. I asked him if he could give me a copy, and he did. This is the Bible in the Chichewan language. And I brought this for Philip and William to see. So see me afterwards and I'll let you see it. They're big fans of the work in Malawi. But if any of you would like to see it, you can see this. This Bible cost about $10. Cost about $10. There's a group of Christians in Missouri who I think have just purchased about 800 of these. And so his stockpile's about to grow. But I can assure you that if you want to contribute to the work and maybe you don't have the money to put toward these other things, anything you give to buy a Bible is going to end up in the hands of someone who needs it. And as was brought out in Jake and Abby's reports, it's the women who don't have them. And so you see in this crowd, that's primarily who's there. So that's something to consider as well. I know some have also purchased the solar Bibles that have gone there for the villages that don't have electricity. So that was the trip. And those are some things that were going on regardless of finances. There is something that we all can do and that's to pray for the success of the work there. There are people who are hungering and thirsting for truth. And if we could multiply Larry by 100, it wouldn't be enough to get to every village in Malawi. But as the case is with every Christian, we do what we can. And even in our assembly today, I imagine there's some who have had an experience with evangelism, not by preaching, but by receiving it. Someone's taught you the truth. Someone's taught you a passage such as what Jesus told His apostles when He said, "All authority has been given to me on heaven and earth. Go therefore to all the nations, teach and baptize." And maybe that's what you're ready to do tonight. Maybe these people a half world away can serve as an inspiration to you to see this is something precious that I have. It's not something common. It's something that I have and that I have learned in abundance. And I'm ready to become a Christian. Let me read you the final paragraph of what Jake wrote. And following that, we'll have our invitation song. "Nothing in this short life can truly and fully satisfy our human desires and needs. Only Jesus can satisfy our wants in the end. And only He can save us. Nothing in this life can fully fulfill our needs, but He can. God created us, He has restored many of us, and He has built a home for us. God's Son came long ago to do His Father's will. He died for you and me, and then rose again, conquering death. It is up to us to continue to share that good news, the gospel, to share that same love and grace He showed and continues to show us. As Christians, we must continue to share the good news of Jesus, the Son of the living God." Jake's with us tonight. Jake, thank you for that. Very well stated. And I hope that that can be an encouragement to you, that if you are on the cusp of making the decision to give your life to God, that today will be the day that you do that. If you need to respond to His invitation this evening, you can come now while we stand and sing together.